SaaS Backwards is sponsored by Austin Lawrence Group, specializing in demand gen for SaaS. It sure is noisy. I deleted 100 emails from vendors just this morning. Your buyer has gotten better at ignoring you, and you're gonna need a big idea if you want to cut through all that clutter. Austin Lawrence is just the right agency to help you find it. So if your campaigns are falling on deaf eyeballs, let's talk. Visit austinlawrence.com today, and let's build something bigger.
Welcome to the SaaS Backwards Podcast, where we reverse engineer the success of fast-growing SaaS firms and explore strategies CMOs and CEOs are using to drive their businesses forward.
Welcome to SaaS Backwards, a podcast that helps SaaS CEOs and CMOs to accelerate growth and enhance profitability. Our guest today is Allison Havener, VP of Marketing at TrustRadius, a firm that helps buyers make better product decisions based on unbiased reviews. It also helps vendors leverage the voice of their customers across their sales and marketing channels. Hey, Allison, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, great to be here.
Yeah, we're happy to have you here. And as you know, big fans of TrustRadius and the research you do. And congratulations, you just published your 2023 Buyer Disconnect report. So that's wonderful.
Yeah, it was really exciting. This is our seventh annual report. So TrustRadius has been putting out this report for many years. And really the goal of the report is to study kind of what's called the disconnect between the way buyers want to buy and their mentality and their expectations when they interact with the brand and the way essentially technology vendors go to market. And so we like to survey both of those audiences and really understand the way buyers want to buy and the way vendors want to interact with them.
Yeah, well, certainly we each have a role to play there. And the vendors certainly want a very nice, orderly journey to be able to build on. And maybe that's not the way it is. So
no, definitely not. And I think we've always known that, but the buyer's journey is not linear in any fashion. But what you also see over time is that it's becoming more and more anonymous. So buyers are, most of them are millennials, and most of them are coming, also the Gen Z is starting to increase. So over 68% of the buying committee comes from that generation. And so they're digitally native. They're used to acting in kind of social circles, social media. They've grown up in this kind of era. And so when you think about the buying process and their mentality, they want to do all of their research on their own. They want to self-serve. They want to validate your claims. And so that's some of what we've been researching over time. And what we try to look at is what are the kind of macro conditions that we're all in right now, especially in the tech industry, that is shaping the buyer's mindset, and really understand that so we can help our customers that we work with, but just help the industry at large kind of close that gap between buyer expectations and go-to-market strategies.
Cool. And, you know, I want to pause just for a moment on the idea of the relative age of the buyers versus the sellers. And I think there's sort of a disconnect there, maybe generationally. I think a lot of the marketing and sales leaders, you know, they skew a little older. So their instincts aren't the same as the people they're trying to sell to. And we try and coach clients on that all the time, that, you know, they're not going to want to talk to you first thing, and they're going to find ways around your gated resources if they can. I mean, that's their kind of MO, right?
Right. And this is transcends generations, I think, as well, too, because we see some of the data that we pull. We do look at, obviously, the generational piece of it, but you also see a lot of these trends that are just transcending generations. Like, nobody listening to this podcast has not dodged a cold call, has not deleted an SDR email, right? And so I think that, yes, while most of them are millennials and so forth, I think that these trends are across generations of, you know, their expectations, because it's really being shaped by the B2C consumer world. We can do most of our buying in the consumer world without ever really interacting with anybody. And so I think that the B2C is moving to the B2B space, and that's really helping with that kind of expectation setting.
That's really interesting. You go to buy a new pair of hiking shoes, you research the price, you buy it online, you receive it without maybe even seeing your delivery driver. If you don't like what it is, you return it without talking to anybody, and then you review it without talking to anybody. So there's that whole kind of ecosystem that I agree with you is having a big impact on B2B. Maybe it would be good to talk a little bit about some of the top line findings from the newest report and some of the ways things have changed in the last year, because I think things have changed, right?
Right. One thing that we look at, so last year in 2022, we looked at the self-serve economy. So what we surveyed was 100% of buyers want to self-serve. Now, what does that mean? Again, that goes back to this. They want product information upfront, easy to find, readily available, and then they're going to validate that with customer proof points. They're going to look at reviews. And essentially what they're trying to get to is the most kind of real life version of the product as possible. And so what we've seen over time and what's been trending is obviously buyers are very skeptical. You think about how much the technology space has exploded. Everybody starts sounding the same. It's really hard to differentiate. People are starting to consolidate even more. So when you thought you were in this technology was in this swim lane, now they're taking up five swim lanes. And so it's really, really confusing for buyers. And there's a lot of misinformation out there. So they've been skeptical. And I don't think that comes as a surprise to anybody. So this year, what we really wanted to understand was how is the kind of economic climate that we're all in, this really big shift in the mindset that we're seeing in the economy, where you saw tech industries grow at all costs and they weren't really worried about how much they were spending to grow at all costs. And now all the conversations are, hey, what's the path to profitability? What's that break even? And it's changing everything. And so a couple of things that we've seen is the need for continued self-service that's only increased. One of the pieces that we've been kind of pulling out is the prove it or lose it. And so you have to prove it up front to your buyers. You have to prove it up front to your customers, or you're going to have a big churn risk. And then the third piece is just kind of this overall risk aversion and how that's changing the buying cycle. So what you're seeing is the resources that buyers use, they're still using kind of the things that we've identified over time, which is user reviews, like interactive product demos. They're looking for free trials, pricing up front. But one of the resources that they're really dependent on is their own prior experience. This was never even in the top 10. I think that this was something that kind of popped up on our radar this year, and it jumped all the way to the number three most influential resources that buyers use is their own prior experience. And so what that tells us is that people are going to go with the technology that they have prior success with. And I think this is really, really important for companies to understand, because you have your current client base. Everybody's kind of, you know, surrounding their current client base, making sure they're retaining them. But you want to turn them really into advocates, because if they go to another company, you want that person to buy your technology again. So I think that was one trend that was really interesting with this kind of risk aversion, is people really relying on their own prior experience. The last was the buying committee is growing. And I don't think I've ever seen a piece of research that contradicts that, but the C-suite is becoming more and more involved, and more specifically, the C-suite means the CFO. Now, this is a huge shift away from where it was going. So years prior, it was actually becoming more democratized, and the decisions were being made at the practitioner level or the team level that was going to be actually using the technology. Now, buyers have to go and create a business case to that C-suite. They have to get a larger buying committee on board, and they have to make that case, and it's going to the CFO. So they have to make that case to the CFO. And so those are some of the bigger trends that we've seen that we really focus on in this year's report.
Yeah, this was a lot to unpack there. Yeah. See if I can remember it all. So I think before I get into like the most recent things you talked about, one of the ones that seems to be hardest for SaaS marketers to sell through their own management is that they should enable video or interactive demos of the product with little or no gating. And do you have any like wisdom to share on how to get the SaaS team on board with revealing more on the website? They seem to want to hold that back for the sales team to run the demo.
So I would step back and kind of like get to the root of it, of like why we want to hide that kind of UI or UX of the product and why we want it to be in that sales conversation. Because that could get to a lot of, if you think of just like your overall product strategy and working with that team from the marketing standpoint. One thing that a lot of our customers do is they use this data and they take it to their C-suite and they say, hey, like, they want interactive demos. The other piece that we've seen is that people don't want to talk to sales. 56% of the buyers said that they have already made a purchase decision by the time they even talk to a sales rep. So you've already either made their short list, or they've already kind of picked you and they just want to understand more, maybe negotiate pricing, et cetera, and they want to accelerate that deal cycle. Now, the way that you build that trust with buyers is essentially giving them that product information. If you think about all of these trends and buyers don't want to interact with you, they don't want to essentially have to talk to a salesperson to get product information. I think that's a really good case to work with your sales team and your product team and say, hey, if we do this interactive demo, we can start to essentially make more buyer shortlists. We can accelerate the deal cycle because they're already getting all this product information up front. And then that makes it easier for the sales team because essentially there can be more consultative than wasting time doing all this annoying cold outreach.
I think there's a lot here for the sales team and marketing leaders, because by the time somebody does say, hey, I want to talk to you, they've made a lot of the decision and you're clearly in the running. And also, really good sales resource is highly, highly valuable. And why would we want to waste time with less qualified prospects? Like in a world where you have someone that knows enough to get very deep into the decisioning versus three people that don't quite know exactly how you might fit, why would you want your $400,000 salesperson talking to those three people? Right? Yeah. We want to talk to the ones that are really ready to go.
And I want to make a clear differentiation too, because a lot of the report, and obviously a lot of people that are coming to Trust Radius and doing all of this research, you know, they're in that mid and bottom funnel where they either already know that they have a problem, they've been researching different technologies within a category, or they're looking at it. So I would separate this kind of, and the way I always talk about it is kind of like the demand creation, like that thought leadership top of funnel. And then there's like that bottom funnel content that's really product specific, where you really start differentiating it when you're doing that partnership with the sales team. And so I want to get people like mindset that most of this report, when we're talking about kind of like that bottom funnel transaction, I think there's still a lot of value and thought leadership. You're hearing a lot about dark social. All of that is like very, very important. But when you're talking about essentially getting those qualified people in, they're bottom of the funnel. They're ready to make a purchase. And you want to make sure that you're capturing that and you're capturing their attention. Because one thing that we've seen is, especially on our site, so we introduced like pricing pages. You can add an interactive demo on Trust Radius. You can actually give people security information all on Trust Radius. And if you don't have that, then they actually go to your competitors and look for it. So we start to do some of that analysis of people using different competitors to find the information that they're looking for.
Yeah. So I think it's important, and you're starting to draw the distinction between sort of demand capture and demand generation, or thought leadership and lead generation. And so one of the questions I had is sort of what's a marketer to do in a world where the marketing created resources are less and less influential? And the answer is, well, go up the funnel and make sure that your web presence and other ways people can learn about you, Trust Radius is a great example, are really well tuned to the changing nature of buyer preference. And I think it's really tempting, especially if you've been a software firm that's been in business more than 10 or 12 years, they start to get a little comfortable in what their go-to-market motion is going to look like. And I think you have to be willing to keep addressing your go-to-market motion because it's definitely getting harder. I mean, certainly, you know, you said very early on about, you know, we've all avoided the SDR calls. I mean, like, you know, my voicemail, it basically says, if I don't know who you are, I blipped you. You know, you're in my voicemail for a reason. But I think people are beginning to realize that these outbound motions are harder and harder. So you better be really, really good. And I think that's also true for anybody who does arrive on our web property. We need to be really, really good and really attuned. So let's sort of go through that kind of hot list from this report. I think you mentioned earlier on proving value. Now, this is one where the reflexive action used to be, well, let's build an ROI calculator, but those don't really do so well. So what does proving value actually mean? How do we arrive at comfort that we're proving value? Because our ROI calculators are hard to make good ones and they're hard to believe.
Exactly. I think that when you look at the report, I think this is a really important section because, I mean, everybody has changed their messaging around like ROI, and it's such a broad term that I think like sales and market, it's like nauseating really. And so what you need to get specific about is the type of ROI. So what we did in the report, which we have an internal research team that like runs our whole survey, which is like amazing. And so they have a lot of really good insights, but it's like, let's define ROI, which I think was really, really smart to dig into that in the report. And so there was a few kind of areas where it was time savings, cost savings, impact on revenue, et cetera. So I think what you have to be really specific about is like, what is your audience going to value? So one of the things that we did, because we survey both technology vendors and buyers, we wanted to understand, how does a buyer think of ROI and what's really important to them? And then what does a vendor think? And what we saw the disconnect was, is that buyers are thinking about time savings and cost savings, which makes sense, right? Again, everyone's budgets are being tightened. People have lost headcount. And so they're thinking about, okay, I have to do more with less. And so is this going to save me time? Is this going to integrate into my systems? Essentially, what's my time to value? Is this a good value for the money that I'm going to be spending on it? And so that makes sense that that's the buyer's mentality. And it's also a really good argument that they can go to the CFO and say like, hey, this technology, I've lost 5 headcount, but if we buy this software, it's, you know, a fraction of the cost that the people cost. And so that's a really easy conversation to have. I shouldn't say easy, but if you're going to the CFO and they're more involved, you can make that argument and you can realize it maybe faster. However, the disconnect is that most marketing messages or most vendors think it's the impact on revenue. And so what you'll see in a lot of these ROI calculators and maybe why they don't work, oh, this amount of pipeline or this amount of revenue or retention and all of those things. And I think that's almost like hard to conceptualize. And it might be a long time to get there. Like, you don't know how long, there's too many variables. You don't know how long somebody's sell cycle is. You don't know what their close rate is. So I think it's like, that for a buyer is like a little too abstract or maybe too far reaching, because then they have to go to their CFO and be like, this is how it's going to impact our revenue. And the CFO is going to, a quarter later, is going to be like, so where's that revenue?
Yeah. And, you know, I started to dig into the report, and I think the, especially resonant with some of my clients, was that we can talk about the things that lead to ROI without getting to a hard number. And you can make a good gut decision sometimes. So for example, if we're increasing automation in your back office operations,
right?
And so any CFO can say, hey, if I don't have to have Mary and Fred standing at a piece of equipment, I can automate that. Well, then Mary and Fred can either do other things, or maybe Mary and Fred, you know, move on. So that's maybe a little heartless, but that's how CFOs kind of are trained to think, but also saving time, right? So I think almost every business leader understands that time and money are very closely related. And so time to implementation or time to market or time to outcome, if we can make those things clearer, we can sort of let people draw their conclusions on ROI. And I just think it's maybe it's a little softer, but I think the hard numbers in a lot of those ROI calcs were kind of made up anyway. So maybe it's better.
Right. Too many variables in somebody's business. So I agree with you. I think it's telling the story of the possibility, but I think people are really gravitating towards like this time savings. We can get up and running in this amount of time, implementation. Because if you buy a piece of software, especially in the SaaS industry, and it takes 90 days to get up and running, you're already like in your mind, you're like, I'm almost through my contract. And so I think like time is a very valuable resource right now. And so I think the more that people can think about that customer journey and the ROI comes from like that to your point around that automation, the integration. And you see that also in some of the other pieces of data that we pulled out is the product usage. So people are starting to evaluate their tech stack. What do I already have bought and what am I not using to its full capacity? What are the integrations that, you know, my current tech stack offers that I'm not integrating the data? So, you know, I don't have to buy another system to integrate the data. And so people are really looking at their own systems, doing an audit, and they're looking for more integrations, ease of use, and that time savings.
You know, it's an interesting question that I wanted to bring here is about product management, because you sort of touched on it earlier and now you just did it again. So firms that are more point solutions might in some ways be vulnerable here. Like if I'm trying to consolidate my tech stack and if money's going to be tight for a while, that might have an implication, not just for the go-to-market teams that, you know, you and we traditionally really serve in a lot of ways, but also for, you know, product management. And it also could involve the corporate team in terms of, do you acquire stuff and become more of a platform play? So there's a lot in this report for different audiences. I think it's really important. So I want to ask you a little bit more about marketing-led content, because a lot of our joint constituents are on the marketing team. So what is the future of marketing-led content? You know, what are we as marketers? If we don't get paid by the word, sometimes it feels that way. So what should we be building that's really going to contribute value to, you know, our clients or our employers and be of value to the people that we might want to influence to make a decision?
This is a really good question. And I think it goes back to, let's kind of bring up the guardrails around, there's demand creation and top of the funnel, and then there's bottom funnel, buyers are in market wanting to make a decision. And so what you'll see, and we call this out in the report because we're like, websites are dead. Just kidding. We don't say that. But what people are looking for is authenticity, and they're looking for your customer voice. And we work a lot with customer marketers, a lot of kind of customer-led growth models where the CMOs really bought into customer-first messaging, using their customers to be differentiated. And I think in a world where so many things are commoditized in the technology space, your competitor can build the feature that you built, you know, already. Your competitor can outspend you. Your competitor can do a lot more. They can do pretty much everything you can. The one thing that they can't do is copy your customer voice. And so I think about this a lot. We call it in the report, like customer-led content. And so think about the authenticity of your voice, but it's really your customer's voice. And how are you going to get that into the channels where your buyer's eyeballs are, whether that's at the top of the funnel or at the bottom of the funnel? And so that's really what we're talking about in the report. And so like a lot of our customers are taking, you know, reviews that live on TrustRadius. That's only one channel that your buyers are in. They're everywhere else. So how are you using customer voice to embed that across your entire website, right? Like if you have a pricing page, why don't you have a customer talking about, hey, this is a really good value for the price.
The best pricing pages, right? Reinforce that you're in the right place. Absolutely.
Right. Or they're going to your landing page and you have all of these amazing customer quotes, et cetera. It sounds really simple, but you'd be surprised. Like you go, you know, when I'm in market and I'm looking at a different technology and I'm like, I have to dig to find something that their customer said about them. And so I think the more that just marketing led, where it's just your jargon, the way you see the world, that's what buyers are just being so turned off by. So you have a skeptical buyer, they're super risk adverse. They don't care what you have to say. They want to hear it from your customer's point of view and from their experience. And so what that does, I think, is really transform your business, because then you need to make sure that customer journey is really top notch and giving your customers what they need, solving for their use cases, getting those results, and then pumping that back out into the market. And it's interesting because what I see a lot of is, you know, people think that customer marketing and advocacy is kind of a nice to have. And it's just mission critical. I always say like customer marketing is marketing. So if you could find that flywheel internally of getting your customer voice across all of your marketing channels. That's what we really mean. Like, it's not marketing led where it's your jargon. It's really your customer's voice.
So I think we have to put a really big point on here, right? We have to make this a big emphasis point. So a lot of clients and prospects that I speak with, they talk about churn as a negative. And the smartest of the CEOs and CMOs and sales leaders that I deal with, you know, they have negative churn, right? So how do they achieve a negative churn or growth through the base? They do it by serving their customers really well, listening really well, building product based on the feedback that they get from customers. You were, I think, before we started the episode, talking about your own customer advisory board.
Yes.
You know, the odd thing is I've met so many CEOs that are afraid to run a customer advisory board. It's like medieval almost. It's like, how could you not want to hear from your customers? And a CEO that I was interviewing yesterday for a research project talked about a point you made, which is that there's no such thing as a software moat. He can't build software that, you know, can't be replicated, but he can build expertise in a vertical market and credibility in that market. How does he get credibility? Sure, there's some thought leadership stuff, but it's really his customers and the people that know about them talking about what they're doing. So, you know, if we're not doing customer marketing at a very senior and thorough level through the organization, you know, maybe that's the firm to bet against in the market. Also, something you said, and like, there's just so much richness in your comments. You talked about their personal experience prior. And we also talked about the fact that the buying committee is getting larger. So if we have 6, 7, 8 people on a buying committee, they probably have a lot of experience. So if we're really smart sellers, we'd get to know what the whole buying committee really well so that we could draw upon, hey, there's 1 or 2 out of the 8 that know us well enough, right?
Right. So, and that goes back to kind of the sales team becoming more strategic into an account, becoming multi-threaded. And I think that's going to be so important. I also think like the message to the CFO. How are you helping, like when you identify a champion within an organization, how are you helping them build that business case to take it to the CFO? And again, I think we talked about this last year, kind of when we were talking about this self-serve economy, is that the role of the sales person is really changing into more consultative. And again, getting away from that transactional like outreach, and that's cold, that gets ignored. You send thousands of emails, you maybe get, you know, 10 meetings out of it. And it's just really inefficient. And so I think that a lot of the sales role that's transforming is this kind of consultative, finding these champions, building this relationship. And it sounds exhausting, like I'm already exhausted just thinking about it. But that's the way buyers are going to buy. And if they're going to be relying on their prior experience, that goes back to our other conversation around the customer experience. If I'm an advocate for one company and I decide, hey, you know what, I'm going to go take a new role at another company, they spend a huge portion of their budget within the first 90 days looking at the tech stack that they're inheriting. Like, first thing I did when I came to Trust Radius, I was like, what's the current tech stack? What are all the renewal dates? What's going on? What's working? What's not? And I redid it, essentially. And I relied on my own prior experience. And so that's what's happening. So build the advocate. If they go somewhere else, make sure you're re-engaging with them. Because one of the things that we also look at in the report, and this is one of my favorite pieces of data, is essentially what buyers deem influential to their buying decision, and then what marketers think is influential to the buying decision. And there's huge disconnects here still. I think there's some areas where the gap is definitely closing, but like over 70% of buyers said user reviews were super, super important and influential to their buying decision. But yet only 35% of marketers thought that they were influential. Same with prior experience. And re-engaging those advocates or prior customers at a different company, only 20% of marketers thought that that was like something that was to be considered or maybe influential in the buying decision. And 70% of buyers said that they were going to rely on that. So I think when you're looking at the data, it's a total mind shift. And we just have to throw out the old playbook. I think we're like in this renaissance, which that's my positive spin on it, is that I think we're in this renaissance of marketing where we have to throw out the old playbook, like the MQL and then the SDR follows up, and then that goes to the sales team, and then we get a meeting, and then a pipeline, like this whole kind of like process that happens. It's just not really happening like that. And so I think where marketers or the whole go-to-market team has to take this data, make this kind of mind shift, and then reset the playbook. And I think what's really exciting is that it's kind of all up to you. So you can start looking at it internally and being like, okay, here's some of the insights. What are we going to do? And get really creative and start kind of making an entire new blueprint.
Well, I'm excited. I can't wait to read the report again and figure out what we're going to do differently. And if people want to get the report for themselves, Allison, how do they get a hold of this?
Yeah, it's on trustradius.com. Easy enough. And it's right there. And it's all ungated. We're all about consumption of the report. So it's in many different formats. So we are going for broad consumption of it. But yeah, it's just right on our website. And as soon as you go there, it pops up. So
that's wonderful. Enough. And if listeners want to reach you, how can they do that?
Just reach out to me on LinkedIn. I'm super responsive and ready to engage and answer any questions or any way that Trust Radius or myself can help.
Well, thank you. This was a great episode. You're a great guest, and I really appreciate your time today. And if folks want to reach me, I'm on LinkedIn/in/Ken Lempit. If you haven't subscribed to the podcast yet, you can do so wherever podcasts are distributed. And thanks again, Allison. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, thank you, Kenneth. This is awesome.
Thanks for listening to the SaaS Backwards Podcast, brought to you by Austin Lawrence Group. We're a growth marketing agency that helps SaaS firms reduce churn, accelerate sales, and generate demand. Learn more about us at www.austinlawrence.com. You can email Ken Lempit at kl@austinlawrence.com about any SaaS marketing or customer retention subject. We hope you'll subscribe, and thanks again for listening.